Welcome to Magic the Flavouring, the Magic the Gathering podcast, where we talk about all things magic flavour design and lore. I'm your host, Andy Mann.
Hello, this is Nathan Cancel.
Hey,
fat
it's
bitches.
Nathan.
Hi.
I could see you smiling as soon as I started doing a little intro. I could see your little face smiling.
It's cute.
Yeah.
It's
welcome to season
while.
Two.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It feels a bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, there won't be a little... I've dropped the sort of Andy Mann... intros before I speak on in season two. So if I've got a guest on, you've obviously been listening.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, I've been doing like a little sort of Marc Maron style, like here's my 5 cents on the things that have been going on in Magic, because like we recorded a few of those like interviews like completely different times, and so I was like, oh, here's my little catch up. Anyway, here's me talking to so and so. But if it was just me, because I've done a few episodes where it's just been me, I'm like, well, I'm not going to talk and then just have me talk again. And so, yeah, so I think I'm going to keep that going through for us. So we're just going to jump straight in.
I thought they were cute, little cold opens almost. It was nice. I liked them.
Yeah.
It was just like, I'm back to our regular viewing. I was like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Some production value, I like it.
Yeah. I mean, so like, listeners will obviously have noticed that the sort of workflow from the podcast has been a little bit slower. And actually, this episode will probably release... when it releases, whenever you see that it's released, the day before it's released, I'll do a little kind of prompt on socials as to why the workflow's been done, been a little bit slower. It's nothing too horrendous, but I think it's good for people to kind of, if I'm aware that if you've kept up with a series or you've kept up with a podcast or whatever, and then suddenly it's not operating in the same sort of way that it has done for a long time, I know from personal experience that you get a little bit like unsure as to what's, you know, because it's your entertainment, right? You invest in it. So, I think it's probably a good idea to kind of flag as to why things have been sort of a little bit slower. But hey ho, you're back. You're back in the country now. And you weren't sure whether you were going to be kind of coming back from Mexico and then going off again somewhere else, blah, blah, blah. But you're just here, right?
I'm resettling. I'm going to resettle. Mexico was awesome. It was lovely. For anyone that's already been there, they already know. The people are fantastic. The scenery, the nature, lizards, mate. Like, oh, man. I think lizards are my favourite creature type in Magic, because lizards, man, they're everywhere. A cat caught them, I bothered them so much. I'm a lizard botherer, apparently. But I'm back. I want to settle back into London. I missed it. I was like 2 weeks in, and I was like, I think I'm addicted again. I miss the hustle and bustle. So Mexico is always going to be there. And I'm sure the next time will be fantastic. I do have still a few other places to go this summer. But yeah, no, I'm back.
Yeah.
I'm flying off.
And
again.
I was going to say, because we actually met physically. We met physically at Command Fest Birmingham, right?
Exactly.
A few weeks ago. Where you were back in the country for like 2.5 days or some shit. And
oh,
then
God, yeah.
you were there for the Saturday and the Sunday, and I was just there for the Sunday. I went up in the morning and our eyes met across the convention hall at the Solihull Hotel.
Music we started playing in my mind. It was beautiful.
Yeah. And then I immediately dropped you and I went to go and see John Avon to get a few signatures on someone.
Yes, fair. But he definitely takes precedence.
My point was going to be is that, oh, that must have been the first time you engaged with Magic in months. And if people who don't know you personally were just listening to this podcast and you were giving it all the gas about being, oh yeah, I'm going to take a little break from Magic when I go off to Mexico. Oh, it's going to be so weird not being in the loop. I don't want to be like rude, and like we can bleep this out if you don't want people to actually know. Can you tell the listeners how many packages roughly you had waiting for you at home when you got back to England because of the shit you ordered when you were in Mexico?
Right, so there's multiple points that converge to the answer to this question. It was roughly, I think it was like about 120. So the thing that compounds that is that, as you said, it was only like a day and a half I was back before Command Fest. So I had a day and a half to open all of those. And then for whatever reason, I bought all of these. And I'll discuss cost as well in a second, which was another unfathomable thing. It ended up being I had to try and revamp all of my decks, build the two new decks that I planned on building, do all of the different changes on the lands and everything. And I had a day and a half to do this in. And that was I was already like, that's going to be tough, you know, to repurpose about, you know, 12 decks, because of course I took 12 decks to Command Fest, but three of which I never even played, but that's a whole nother fucking drama. So not only did I have that, I then had to, I spent a whole evening unpacking, because anyone who buys cards from Card Market knows how absurd some people package their cards. And I had 120 of these packages to get through. It took me a whole evening and a whole morning just to sort them all. Before, it was honestly one of the worst Magic experiences of my entire life. But at the same time,
poor baby. Poor at the baby. Same time,
well, look, all I'm going to say is for those that want a nice long holiday, going to Mexico, everything's disgustingly cheap, and then you can spend all of your savings on Magic cards that you've wanted forever. You know, so now I've got a treachery and everything, and my life is complete. But Command Fest was awesome. You know, I know it's been a few weeks and everyone's over it by now, but it was absolutely awesome. Baldur's Gate, completely missed that. I was a little limited with it. Maybe made the best limited deck I've ever played out of Baldur's Gate. Mm. So, yeah, really, really cool. It's good to be back playing Magic. Good to be back.
Yeah.
I've missed it.
Yeah, we've been playing a bit of Spell Table. You were down the game shop the other day. Yeah. Yeah.
Because Magic doesn't stop, Andy, does it? Magic never stops.
But I was under the impression that you were going to have a little break, and literally, you were in the airport at, did you go from Heathrow? Where did you leave from?
Yeah, Heathrow to Madrid, Madrid to New Mexico.
You were already on our like two or three WhatsApp groups that we have for Magic and our local play groups chatting about releases. And I was like, Nathan, fucking put the phone down. You're going on like the trip of a lifetime. And every goddamn day you were like, oh, I've just seen the new spoilers. Oh, I've got to put that in my deck. Oh, I can't wait to play Baldur's Gate. Every day. What did you do in Mexico?
I sprained my ankle and there was the worst hurricane that the country's seen since 1939. <I don't know. laughs> When Nathan goes on holiday, he goes on holiday hard.
Ankle in the first week?
Second weekend, yeah. Turns out skimboarding's a little bit harder than surfing, especially if you've had a few too many mezcals, which in Mexico
you were showing off.
Yeah.
You said you were showing off to
Trying
people.
To be a dude.
You twisted your ankle.
First time I've ever really hurt myself properly. It was abroad halfway across the world.
Gosh.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
So all you could do is sit in a hammock and look at Magic spoilers.
Look at Magic spoilers. Yeah. I wrote up like about 12 different lists for Ishin to the point of where I overthought it and didn't even take him. I didn't even take him to Command Fest. I got so frustrated with myself. It was ridiculous. Never overthink decks or build decks in theory. This is something I kind of want to talk about maybe in like a full episode down the line, is about like theory crafting versus like crafting from your actual collection and kind of the difference of how flavor and stuff can work. But I want to say is don't overthink your decks, because I did and it hurts. Magic should be fun. It shouldn't be stressful.
Funny. That's how my sister writes today. What we are actually talking about, and it's you're back on the podcast, it's just we talk about a couple of things, and like we are in an uncharacteristic spoiler lull. Like this is the kind of calm. Sorry, I know this might be triggering for you, seeing as you were in a storm in Mexico. This is the calm before the storm, right?
Right.
Because we've got, there's been a few releases pushed back because of supply issues and, you know, this and the other. And, you know, we've been on an endless hype train, and this was going to be already a little bit of a natural bump. But Unfinity got pushed back, and we also have Dominaria United coming up. Now, they have shown spoilers, and they have given us, like, little teasers. And they've done all this promo work, which I know you're going to expand on, where they suddenly found all these thousands and thousands of dollars worth of Legends product just in the vaults at WotC. Someone tripped over them under like a store cupboard, and here we are, like a billion boxes of Legends, which they're going to be feeding into the new Dominaria United boosters, which you'll talk about in a second. But it is quite nice to be able to have a little bit of room to breathe. And after whatever the last set was, and I can't for the life of me actually remember, Baldur's Gate, that's it. Oh, and
that's why you can't remember
2022. Yeah, exactly. It is nice to have not much new product going on. Now, we're going to start with Dominaria, and then we'll move on to Unfinity. I have mixed feelings about Unfinity, and we'll get on to those.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah,
so,
that's funny because you and I have very different attitudes towards the unsets. But let's talk about Dominaria United first. So
yeah.
Dominaria United is going to be released. When is it? When is it going to be released? That's a good question, Andy. September 9th. Oh, 3 days before my birthday. And yeah, they've released some cards with it. There are also story spoilers as well. We're not going to get into that. You have seen them. I have not.
I have, yeah. It's an interesting source that it came from as well. And we, yeah, it's fine. I don't think it affects anything that we've seen. So I'm good. I'm happy.
Yeah, I just, it's just, you know, I this magic story is the one thing which we don't get spoiled like immediately. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really odd. It's really strange that it happened. It's frustrating. But yeah, you know, things happen.
But we do have some cards. So yeah, why don't you talk to us about Dominaria United?
Well, yeah, so Dominaria United, interesting that they... So let's talk about the Legends thing first, because this is one thing I think is really interesting, is they've kind of... It's almost like they're kicking off their 30th year anniversary with this, right? So they kind of want it to be a big splash. They want to do something that's a bit of a celebration. I quite like one aspect of the Legends like duality, as I'm going to call it, which is where they've reimagined some of the Legends from the set, some of the more let's say gimmicky ones, you know, like some of the bad multicolored commanders, you know, and they're going to reimagine, I think, 20 of them as box toppers. They're not going to be legal in standard, so they can push the envelope on them. It's the same kind of thing that they did with Commander Legends, of where they gave us like the ghost of Di Pietro, and now we're going to get the actual character a bit updated, which I think is a really nice thing that you can have all three of them now. It's almost like they're do-over, which I think is really cute. I think the thing that's not really cute is I don't know how I feel about this whole, oh, we found all of this hidden product and we thought, oh, we might as well share it with the players, you know, we'll give this out and it will be like an extra bonus and celebration. Because for me, most Legends cards are pretty boring. I find the gold thing quite ugly, like the gold bordering quite ugly. There's no, for me, I don't know what the appeal is. And I don't know if it's quite the celebration of the 30th anniversary that I really give a crap about, which is kind of unusual, right? Because I quite like the idea of expeditions. I quite like the idea of when they did like the treasure things, like the hidden treasures where you could like find power 9, I think, in packs. Like,
yeah.
I like that kind of idea. They're kind of almost like they're putting too much of a, look at this gift we're giving you. And it's like, it's not a gift that I want. The one person in like maybe one or two people in the world are going to open Tabernacles. Do you know what's going to do to the price? Fackle. It's gonna do nothing. Doesn't matter. There's no more availability. So all of the big hype, like the leading hype for me is a like ethereal. You know, it's not even real in my desire part of the brain. And then on top of that, some of the cards, like things like, you know, Sylvan Library, I think Mana Drain, those haven't made the cut as well. So it's almost like you're gonna get what, in 3% of collector boosters, not even any booster, in collector boosters. So thanks for the gift, I have to pay more for it. Cheers Wizards. You're gonna get hard, and then you're gonna get one of any common, uncommon, rare, you know, like, is it that big a deal? No. If you open a Nicol Bolas, like an original Nicol Bolas from Legends, for example, fuck yeah, that's cool. But only one person in the world is probably gonna be doing that, you know. So, or unless they happen to lose that box in a fucking warehouse somewhere as well, so that card never gets opened again.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, it just gets double packaged, right?
Just, right, yeah, exactly.
It sits on someone's shelf.
Yeah, precisely. Oh, I happen to buy a box of Dominaria United collector boosters to draft one day or whatever, and they never do, and they're just funny. So that part of it, I don't think is that interesting. Everything else I find is super interesting. Like, for such a small amount of spoilers that they gave us, I think they've shown a lot of cool things, enough hints in terms of story. They've given us a couple of throwbacks, and then they've given us some absolutely stunning lands. I think that what we've seen so far is really, really cool. Since we're talking about the Legends, we did mention Ramirez Di Pietro. Pillager is his name. He's a 4-drop, 4/3 for 2 blue-black. He's a cool dude. When he enters the battlefield, you lose 2 life, you create 2 treasure tokens. Whenever one or more pirates you control deals combat damage to a player, exile the top card of that player's library. You may cast that card for as long as it remains exiled. Obviously, I love this.
Yeah, fairly piratey.
Yeah, fits right into the horror deck that recently came out that did horror pirates. You know, it's a nice little lieutenant for that. I love the fact that they took the vanilla legend of Jasmine Boreal and they made her a vanilla legendary. You know, I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, she taps to... for mana, but only to cast creature spells with no abilities, and creatures you control with no abilities can't be bought by creatures with abilities. Really cool. They did a bit with that with Strixhaven as well, I think, with the no abilities, which is cool. So that's a cool thing. I what do you think about these lands? Because I was shocked when I noticed that it was Magali Villeneuve. Of course, they're stunning and they're beautiful, and I think that they're some of maybe her most striking pieces, but I was really surprised to see they were her, because it's very not her style when you compare it to something like, say, Thalia.
Sure, but you're right. So the but's a small but. The latest secret lair, which Magali contributed to, there was the forest with the fox, and it looked all very sort of Zelda, sort of Wind Wakery. Do you remember that? There's a secret lair.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And we know for a fact, because she's put it all over her socials over the past couple of years, that she's been obsessed with things like Zelda, and we know that she's a big Studio Ghibli fan. Magali was obviously on this show, right, talking to us about, mm-hmm. about her love for all that kind of thing and influences. And I kind of feel, you get this a lot with magic artists, they have their sort of magic style. Like Johannes Voss is a really good example of this, where they have their magic style and then they have their personal style, which is kind of wildly different, right? And I sort of feel like this is Magali's other lead-in, but she's never had the chance to do it on magic until now. Now, I really like Magali. I hope we were firm friends when we had a little chat with her on the podcast, and I really bemoan saying this, but this is my personal opinion. I think these lands are a little busy.
I like that. Little busy.
They're a little busy. I don't want to. They're not for me. They're not for me. I think they're a bit much.
See, it's funny because this is for me. Like, these are all of the things that I see other people when they like the Nyx lands. I really don't like those aesthetically. I don't know why, but I find these to be much more attractive than those. And I feel like they're both kind of going for the same energy card kind of vibe that, you know, the structure of Pokemon.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's kind of funny.
Nyx cards, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why. I understand aesthetically why they're pleasing. I just don't personally enjoy them.
Sure.
I think that maybe there might even be direct references in these five. I'm pretty sure it's Benalia on the plains. My Dominaria knowledge is too small to know the other ones. But I understand where you're coming from.
Surely,
I mean,
that's got to be Urborg right in the swamp. And
that's what I'm thinking. Shiv. Yeah, and then the forest should be Yavimaya, exactly, or it could be Lanoir,
and then the water one is the water one.
Don't know. Water. Yeah, I can't remember what island it is. Maybe it's a specific island. I'm not sure. I might flag up on Twitter and be like, are these specific locations? The good thing is they're super available, right? Like the problem with that forest is that it's a secret lair forest, like the swamp, you know, the Severkin swamp, like they're much harder to get hold of, whereas these are abundant. So if you really want to fit out your whole deck with these, which I reckon a lot of people will, it's really nice that you can get hold of these naturally in packs, which I think that's the kind of thing I celebrate, is when the basics are like super, super, super good, because you can just get a bunch of them, like in Amonkhet, for example. Good set, cool set, not necessarily loads of powerful cards, so it didn't matter because every pack you get a sick-ass basic. You know, so it's a good trade-off.
Yeah. I agree. And I'm also, by the way, I'm not someone who's getting fatigued by a lot of the full art lands. Like, I know there are some people that are kind of a bit upset that Unsets and Zendikar sets were the only ones which had full arts, and now almost every other set has full arts. I don't personally care, if I'm honest with you.
What's the argument against that? I would like lands with less art more often, please, so that the ones when they do get the ones that with the bigger art that I like, they're more important, even though I like it with more art. So can I have it with less art more often? How does that argument work?
I think people just like it when things are... It's like it's something we've said. There is a fine balance between having special things, but then if everything's special, nothing is, right? But I just think in the case of full art lands, they've all been great. So, like, right. I really enjoyed the Sam Burley Nyx lands. Like, I think the reason I prefer those to these ones with the mana symbol aesthetic in them is that they were maybe just a cleaner, almost more uniform design in of themselves, right? So they did look more like basic lands that just happened to be full art and happened to have a special artwork on.
Sure. The symmetry and everything.
Whereas these
more
are
neat
all
and
different.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I appreciate that. I guess, I don't know why I thought it. We're not far away from having landscape lands, right? Where they do it the other way around just to really screw with people. That'd be quite funny. I mean, I get the argument. I just don't see, as long as they keep doing something different. And again, it's funny they got Magali to do a non-Magali style set of lands. You know, like they can keep doing this with different artists and have everything stand out. I mean, more is more, you know, that as we always say, more is more. I mean, I guess they just have to keep finding ways to reinvent the old frame as well, like with the both of the D&D sets where they put the flavor text in it. That makes it interesting to have the old border because it makes sense because you need the space for the flavor text, right? So as long as it reinvents revolutionizes either way in a way that's interesting, then it's fine. But I mean, they're also just basic lands. They will eventually always be basic. So
For sure. Some of the stuff we can tell from the cards that we've already seen of Dominaria United, there's like obviously some flavor things going on here and some story relevant stuff. If you look at Shivan Devastator, which was a dragon hydra, love it. Everything's a hydra, gotta be good. I can't wait till we get something like absolutely stupid, like a horse.
Okay,
hydra.
Pause. pause, okay, because I literally have a list of the hydras we've seen and what I think the next best one could be, because like we've got some weird ones already, right? Because we've had Horror Nightmare, right? We've had Chimera, we've had Helion, we've had Jellyfish, although it wasn't the head part, so I feel like that's cheating. We've had the goat, obviously, Capricopian. So I was thinking, well, what's the next best candidate? Sphinx would be really cool. A three-headed Sphinx where it tells like three different riddles.
That would be good, yeah.
Each head has a different riddle. That'd be cool. Bird, because it's Dodrio from Pokemon. Like, how has that not been done yet? That's ridiculous. One that I think's really, I'm surprised we haven't had yet, is Demon. A Demon Hydra. Like, that would be really cool.
Okay,
considering we've already had Horror and Nightmare.
Yeah, but I mean, how sentient do these things have to get before they be, like, I've been under the impression that hydras kind of need to be a bit more bestial. Do you know what I mean?
Okay,
whereas
sure.
demons,
yeah, are more, you don't want to be like, humanoid.
Human hydra, like that doesn't work.
Do oh god, I mean? That's just a multi-faced centaur. Oh, that's awful. Oh Nathan, no, stop thinking. Right, cool. Frog.
And I think
frog hydra.
Frog hydra. I mean, they've done turtle hydra, haven't they?
Yeah, they did a lizard one with the whip tongue. I think that's cool. I wouldn't mind seeing like a leviathan one, like an underwater hydra. You know, I think that'd be quite cool considering the name is like hydra and hydro. And then also the other one I thought would be cool is basilisk. Imagine having like the petrification ability on multi-headed creature. Like that'd be cool. That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
Anyway, that was the side bit of hydras.
No,
carry on.
I'm glad. Yeah. We could talk all day about fucking hydras. Hydra, be great. The flavor text, sorry, on Shiv and Devastator reads: there were many reasons why Shiv was not high on Shieldred's list of places to conquer. Big fiery reasons. So Shieldred's on Dominaria.
Yes.
So straight up,
clearly on plane,
not hiding that. Clearly on the plane. Love it. Great. I was under the impression Shieldred was defeated somewhat the last time we saw the Praetors.
So the last thing we heard of her was that her realm had been conquered, but there was no same thing with Urabrask, but neither of their fates were set in stone in terms of what happened to them. Right. I was more surprised to see Urabrask alive than Shieldred. Had they been smart about it and really kind of done, I think what I like to see is like the deep lore on the Phyrexians, the Steel Thanes always were in a fight for control. So I wouldn't have minded seeing like Geth or something to show that the Black Praetor role is so capricious that it can just like kind of move around based on who has the current, you know, sway, especially since Elishnor might be against having Shieldred still in place. But we might mean that Shieldred's even more subjugated. It might mean that there's more some more nuance there. Who knows? The fact that she's on plane, though, is kind of a bit scary because it means they've kind of perfected their interplanar travel stuff. And it's interesting they've dropped her straight away, meaning we still haven't seen Elishnor, which means she still will probably be, you know, the big bad boss at the end of the arc, which is cool.
Yeah, 100%.
Also, isn't it cool 100%. That a Praetor's scared of dragons? I like the fact that it's scared of a dragon hydra, because I fucking would be, but even like a Praetor is, you know, like even the Praetor's like, you know what, let's just wait until we get like Phyrexian oil arrows, we can just fire it and complicate you that way. I'm good with messing with you. Like Dominaria is a big scary place, it's got some powerful shit, you know. I feel like that's the thing that I really want to see in this set, is I want to see that Dominaria really does have the balls and the chops to kind of take on the Phyrexians. I mean, again. I think it's that many times.
so we know Shieldred is about, which is pretty cool. Jaya is obviously going to be a massive part of this story. Jaya Ballard. We've seen two cards with her on. We've seen Temporal Firestorm, which has Jaya in the artwork along with Teferi, and they're kind of doing like a little bit of a team up, because it's a red card with white and blue activation kickers, which is pretty cool. And we also see that Jaya's got a planeswalker card, Jaya, Fiery Negotiator. So clearly Jaya's got some business to be going around with, and the card creates red monks as well, which is obviously a reference to the monastery where I guess Jaya and Chandra kind of first met when she was, what was it, Mama Luti?
Mama Luti, yeah, Carol Keep, yeah.
In Carol Keep, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, a lot of kind of legacy storylines going on. And it's funny, interesting that you said earlier that your Dominaria history wasn't sort of quite up to scratch, because that is true of literally everyone who's ever played Magic. I've been listening a lot to the Vorthos cast, as it's no secret we listen to the Vorthos cast here, because they're the Vorthos podcast. And they've been doing a big sort of deep dive on Dominaria history and the lead up to Dominaria United. And even like Ethan Fleischer and Jay and Ellie are sat there going, oh, there's some stuff going on here that we had to really dig deep to figure out what the fuck's going on. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, the fact that they're bringing back a bunch of these legends is a really nice... It's like how when they did Dominaria in 2018, right? Because that was just the set Dominaria, and that was a fucking fantastic set. Really solid. And also one block as well, which I think people forget, and it really worked as a one block set. But that had so many references and so much history towards like Dominaria of like years past.
But it was the birth of Sargus, wasn't it?
It was the first. Yeah, because it was the historic mechanic.
Yes.
But that was a set that managed to merge the old and the new to make something that was really fresh and relevant for the time that it was then. Because it was also at a key point before War of the Spark and before a bunch of like these kind of end of the Gatewatch storytelling sets. So I just hope that they're able to pull off a similar thing with Dominaria United. I think Dominaria United is a bit more leading, is a bit more story starting, if you like, because it's kind of, you know, it's leading into, it's ramping up into something bigger than itself, I think. But I hope that they're able to, they don't just get lost in this idea that, you know, they had this, oh, we found a whole bunch of boxes of legends and like we've opened them up and look at all this history of magic. And lots of people are sat there going, well, we don't know about any of these. Who are these characters even? You don't even know. Mm-hmm. So I hope they don't get lost in that, right?
Sure, because it's a launching point for the new arc, but then it's also trying to do a throwback kind of, I guess that's why it's the 20 box toppers, right? If they're not technically in the set proper, it kind of lives as almost like a supplementary of, Not only are we showing like the next chapter in Dominaria, but we can also give a look back at one of the older chapters that people haven't, you know, experienced before. And I guess if we had wanted the set to feel more, you know, legendary without having too many more characters in the main set, then you can add all of these old legends and give them a revamp and give them a time in their sun, in the sun, because only a few of them were even possible as viable commanders, right? So you actually get to maybe even have your pride and joy since 1995, you know, or, you know, you get to use that again, but as a better card. So I think that's, but I understand what you mean. I feel like they need to not overshadow the gravity of what this set's going to be setting up going forwards, because a full block arc is the biggest they've done technically outside of what Lorwyn. Because we had the Lorwyn, Morning Tide, Shadowmoor, Eventide. So that's pretty big, the fact that they're doing that. And if I wonder how it's going to operate as a block. I wonder if it's going to be drafted. I think it's still going to be drafted as individuals, though, right? Even if it's an arc.
So, yeah, we're talking... What are we talking? We're talking Dominaria United and... What's the
Brothers
other
War.
In this block?
Brothers War. Yeah. And then we don't know the name of the second two. I think we find out in like a couple of weeks' time what the other two are going to be called.
It is continuing on through. Yeah. Because one of your worries, I think we were talking about this at Command Fest Birmingham, is that one of your worries, and this is me, you're here, you can literally talk for yourself, but you were saying to me that you were worried that they were going to kind of bait and switch it, and that the Brothers War set was going to kind of interrupt the story and they weren't going to come back to it. Like, what was your concern? Because it got proven wrong straight away, but you were worried that they were going to do something, right?
Yeah, I was worried that it was almost like that the jump back to Brothers War was kind of going to, as you say, like stagger the story. So it'd be like, right, so that's already going on, but wait, pause. And then we find out something in the Brothers War. It's almost like they found a clue or something in the story, and then you go, what's this? And then we get a set explaining what it is, even though it's not relevant to what's going on at the moment. But I think what's going to happen is, the other thing that I was kind of worried about, because it's, oh, hold your pants, hope you get it right, is that I think they're going to do timey-wimey, jumpy-backy stuffy, you know, which is fine. But I think, because if it's a four-set arc, I don't think they would say that with having a random set interrupting and being from a different time just to explain a MacGuffin. I feel like that's not something they would do. Like a pocket story within the story seems silly. I feel like they would want something that has like a through arc, you know, especially if this is going to be maybe at the end, like the end of the Phyrexians, then you kind of need to give them as much current relevance, you know, because if we just jump back to the Brothers War, nothing that's happening there is actually matters because it's already happened, you know, so we need to make sure that whatever that is happening is part of the journey our characters are taking, is actively present in the third and the fourth sets as well. Like, it needs to have ramification, needs to have an arc that goes through it. It can't just be, oh, and now for something completely different. And now back to our regular viewing. You know, I don't think that would work. I think it would be really jarring for newer players coming in as well, because they'd be like, well, what the fuck's all this set going on? Like, what's all this? Who are these characters? And you'd be like, that maybe might have been the right idea. So, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be fine. I have faith. You know, I'd have more faith than I do.
I think it's going to be good, because if you look at some of the box art, I'm looking at some of the key art for the set boosters and the draft booster boxes for Dominaria United. The key art is always a really nice place to look for sort of signifiers as to where the set's going to go or the kind of tone of it, right? Because there's the advertising for the game. On the draft boxes, we see the key art, which has Khan, Joda, and Shana, who was Shana Sisse's legacy, so a descendant of Captain Sisse. So it's cool, and the Weatherlight's also in the background, still nice and going. So it's a good chance we'll see Joya as well coming back, and indeed the rest of the new Weatherlight crew, which I think I said in an episode a few weeks ago, weeks probably months now, that I really wanted to see those characters return as is. I don't want to do any bollocks where it's like, oh, half of them went off to do other shit. I want to see Tiana, I want to see Arvad, I want to see fucking Slimefoot, I want to see all the gang,
the full crew. Yeah,
the full crew. They were a cool bunch, they had a good dynamic. Let's get them back, let's have them have like different legendaries and maybe have like slightly different events, maybe a new
we've established our cast, right? We don't need to introduce another cast at this stage of the game. Like, yeah.
Really cool. So I hope we see them again. And then on the set boosters, we've got Ajani and Liliana. Now, here we go.
Right.
Here's the thing with Liliana.
Is her name Liliana? Before, I thought it wasn't Liliana. I thought it was something different.
This is the thing, right? So whenever the Gatewatch characters are now coming back, we have to do this little dance around our own expectation, because immediately we go, yeah, but we have had enough of the Gatewatch, and then we immediately realize that War of the Spark was like 3 years ago, right? And we actually haven't seen these characters. Like, when Zendikar Rising came around, we had to concede that we hadn't actually seen Jason Nyssa since then, so that's fair enough. Liliana was another one where it was like, okay, she was Anna Ihora at the end of whatever the fucking book was, and then in Strixhaven she comes back, she's Professor Onyx, and that's really cool. So fine, she's back, she's doing a new thing, she's got story growth, she's the most interesting one out of all of them anyway. To see her back on the key art, and she's in her like classic Liliana gear, and she's got the headdress on, and I'm just like, oh, but this is going backwards.
It's a bit
now,
throwback, right? Isn't it? It feels like, oh, let's get the old band back together. Because obviously Ajani and Liliana were like the original black and white figureheads, and obviously Shana and Jace is going to be there. Poor Garrick, we have no idea what Garrick's doing. Oh no, he had the kids, didn't he? He looked after them. He was babysitting for a while, and that was not babysitting anymore.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's not here. Yeah. You watch, they bait and switch, and they suddenly get Garrick involved somehow. Ugh. Because he's a planeswalker hunter, so he can kill compilated planeswalkers. Oh my god, it all makes sense, Andy. My tinfoil done. Garrick's going to be in the next set, and we're not Brothers War. I take it off. Not next set. Anyway.
Unless they send him back, they send him back Terminator style, and now he's like a planeswalker Terminator.
Oh, he would be the perfect Terminator style.
He would be the perfect one going back to the Brothers War. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome. I've also just realised how similar are Garrick and Vence's helmets. Pretty similar now you think about it, right?
Yes.
That's annoying. Anyway, talking about leading big characters, because we got that temporal firestorm with Jaira and Teferi, it stands to reason, I think it was confirmed, that there will be a cycle. So we've got a muse. Are they all going to be planeswalker duos? Or are we going to get maybe some of like Raph and Joyra doing one or something? Because I've lined up a prospected list, but it's only planeswalkers. But as soon as you started mentioning Raph and Chiana and those kind of people, I was thinking maybe they also get some magic, you know, maybe they get to do some team up spells. That'd be quite good. Legendary creatures, like, say, imagine like Joda and Joyra, because they had a thing in the past. Imagine them doing like a combo spell, you know, or having one of our planeswalkers doing a combo spell with a legend. Because as it stands, I think it only works that the absent one would be Ajani and Liliana, that we've already seen them together on a packer anyway. Mardu one, I guess, would be Chandra and Kaya. Maybe is Kaya going to be here? We don't know yet. Like, surely, I mean, how much are we uniting is the question, right? The team
can't
one,
be another War of the
Jason
Spark,
Arlen.
Yeah.
But, I mean, is Arlen still? Arlen's invested, right? She's part of the whole Moonsilver thing that Teferi was doing, so she's going to be about. So I imagine at least all of them are going to be. And then I've got a nice one for the Solto one, and that's Tamio and Tezzeret for the bad team.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah, yeah. Complete right. The cycle with an adversary one. That's
yeah, great. Precisely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. As long as I don't put Khan on one of them, because no matter what he's on, he'll be broken. Then we're fine. And plus, he's colourless. So you can't really do like a colourless one, right?
Thank God you're back on this podcast, mate. This podcast has like dropped so many IQ points, magic words. <into that. laughs> And now you're back on giving me the fucking cycle of cards that are going to be coming out. That's so cool.
Well, I mean, you know, I feel like I fumbled the beginning talking about getting angry before I had a chance to form my thoughts. But now we're getting into the nitty gritty of mechanics and stuff. I mean, yeah, I'm here. I'm back, baby. It's good. I think I like what I've seen so far. I wasn't particularly hyped for Dominaria United. I think I was just kind of like holding back my excitement until it kind of got closer to time, because we've known about it for a while and there's been so much stuff that's come out since then that I also wasn't super excited about. That now it's kind of like I get to open that jar and go, oh, I do remember how good the last Dominaria set was. I am really excited about the culmination of another story arc with a bunch of different things I think they've handled a bit better, you know, than going into War of the Spark. I mean, I don't know, going into War of the Spark, they handled a lot of the things that led up, the puzzle pieces falling into place. They did it quite well. We haven't really had any reveal yet with any of the Phyrexian stuff, so I can't really comment on if it sticks the landing, but it does feel like this moving up in gears is really cool, considering we've got another 4 sets to get through to kind of get to the culmination. Because if you think about it, by the time we get to there, it's already been set up all the way since back before Kaldheim. You know, so it's interesting. If we're truly talking, we're talking all the way back in, you know, Mirrodin. So yeah, you know.
Well, yeah. So yeah, I can foresee right after. We'll see how we feel after Brothers War, Dominaria United, and whatever comes after. But I guarantee there's going to be large sections of the community that are going to be like, oh, well, that Phyrexian story arc took no time at all. They built up War of the Spark over loads of sets, and then you remember exactly. You're right. They've been doing this since Kaldheim. And think of all the sets that have come out since Kaldheim. They've been Strixhaven's in there. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think they have given this storyline the legs. If they are doing another 4 sets and it does finish there, that would still be far more than enough time for one story arc. You know,
precisely.
I think people are so het up, rightly so, because I am one of them. Rightly so, because I'm one of them. As if
what a statement, right. Out of context. Yeah. That's fantastic. I think that's a t-shirt.
People are correct to be hurt about this because I am. The fact that, you know, one set blocks are kind of doing a little bit more harm than good in terms of the narrative of the story, right? Clearly, sales are through the roof, so whatever. But I actually do think that not having a Praetor in literally every set. Like, remember when we thought Jinkataxis was going to turn up as the headmaster in Strixhaven? And they didn't that.
They didn't
like,
do it. Cool.
That's actually kind of cool. And they have taken their time and they have built things up. Not even the landing. We still got to get through like the second half of the second act, if you like. We're still not quite to the last leg. So the last leg will be kind of Brothers War and whatever happens the 2 sets after. So we're still ramping up to the third act here. And hopefully they'll stick it. It looks like they're doing a pretty good job, I think. Anyway.
Well, I mean, the Tamiya cliffhanger, I think, was like the one thing I remember feeling like that ripple in the Magic community of like, oh, shit. Like, that whole reveal was fantastic. And if you think about it, even like for a lot of players, they've only started playing in like the last like 5 years or so. Like, so the set New Phyrexia, which was like the cliffhanger set of, oh, no, they failed. There is a new Phyrexia. That doesn't actually have as much weight for them, but we're getting that payoff now. We haven't been back to that place since then. We get to finally look back, and it's almost the same amount of time that, say, a player like myself, when I first started out, had been since the Phyrexians were last in Magic for me then. So it's kind of really interesting to have that kind of, for the new people, they don't know. Oh, Phyrexia's going to come and it's going to do some damage, and they're not ready for it. That's going to be cool. It's going to be cool. I'm excited. Excited.
Cool. I am as well. So that's Dominaria United. We'll be doing hours and hours and hours on Dominaria United over the coming months. No worries there. So let's talk about...
Can I quickly blow my nose?
Infinity. You can quickly blow your nose.
Thank you. Whilst we're in that pause. Thank you.
Cool. Are you good? You're all nose blown?
Yeah, nose is blown.
Well, now that you've got that gunk out your system, let's inject some more bollocks into our system, shall we, with talking about Unfinity. No prizes for guessing how I feel about this set coming up. It will be noted, classically, my feelings towards unsets have been shockingly lukewarm, whilst you are a big fan of unsets, right?
I'm a big fan in theory, yeah. I mean, it's one of these like nostalgia things. Well, because it might have changed, okay? It might have changed. But when I first started playing, or when I first started buying packs, Unglued had just kind of like been around for a while. So like, packs were £1 mm-hmm. each. And so I used to invest a lot in those, just as kind of little jokey cards. And they were kind of perfect for when I was starting out Commander, playing stupid cards like Akhan's Run, that kind of thing in decks. And because it was before I thought about abusing every single card that was in my deck, they were fine. You know, we recently had that thing of where we had 3 months of being able to play legally in the format of having Unstable around, and people could have their fun. You know, we could always rule zero things and everything. I think it's going too far, and that's coming from someone who fucking loves these kind of sets. Is that
I agree.
There's one great bugbear. Like, the concept is fantastic. Like, they nailed things like contraptions and stuff before. I really enjoyed that as a way to kind of do a throwback to Steam Flogger Boss. I thought it was really well. I thought Unstable was really good. I understand why certain people didn't like it. It's not the set's fault that the CAG decided to, you know, like, maybe let it for a little bit and then change it. And that was all complicated and annoying. And now they've just kind of, like, doubled down on the dumbness and done this stupid. Half of the set's legal, half of it isn't. Some cards that I think are fine won't be, and some cards that really shouldn't be legal are. So
they've done away with silver borders. That's the thing that we should say at the top. They've done away with silver borders, and instead what they've done is that if a card is not legal, legacy legal, and
Eternal legal.
Format legal. Eternal, sorry. I always get what... confused, then it will have the hollow stamp at the bottom of the card will be the shape of an acorn, because everyone loves squirrels and squirrels become like the mascot of the
Unset. Oh god, I didn't even think about that level, but yeah, lol.
Oh god. And if they are legal, they'll have the regular oval shaped hollow stamp, right? So mm-hmm. if we look at, there are two legendaries that have been, well, there's a few legendaries that have been spoiled, but if you look at two of them, you have Angelic Herald and Magar of the Magic Strings. And Angelic Herald has the acorn stamp, and Magar has the oval stamp. Although on certain reveal printings, they've already messed up that.
They've already fucked it.
On the altar of Magar, they've got the acorn stamp, which is like, oh, so I can't play the alt art version. But you can play the regular one.
Yeah, it's a way to make the regular apparently, one worth as much. That's the thing. So you can only play that one.
Apparently that's just an error in the PDF like image of the, that's not actually going to be how the card is printed.
Even the
you
staff
know what I mean? Like, they can't even,
even the staff don't know how it works. So how are we going to have to how are we going to deal with that? Because that's the thing, right? It's for legacy players, it's very rare and it's very unlikely that they're going to make a card that's legacy playable. You know, although I look at Saw in Half and I can't help but think that maybe there's a way to break that. But, you know, it's very rare that you have a card that will break legacy, because legacy is exceptionally fast and powerful and efficient. But EDH is not necessarily any of those things if you're not playing it competitively. So I feel like there's certain things really shouldn't be able to be okay. And the problem is, not only is that certain cards are going to be controversial to play against, some players are going to end up playing cards not realizing they're not supposed to. They're going to be able to deck around these cool, like really cool interactions. Because that's the thing that frustrates me about these sets. Is for years they've always had these really cool, quirky effects that you can rule zero. But realistically, if there's always going to be that dick that breaks it, and then you can just have to turn around and go, well, it's not legal, so stop playing it. But it's going to be really hard for players to build these really cool effects for then, like 3 games in, or going to the local game store, someone leans over and goes, oh, actually, that card's not legal, you can't play that. And they go, what do you mean? It's like, well, it's got that tiny little difference of the thing at the bottom. And their entire deck then doesn't do that cool thing that they wanted to do. Like Killer Cosplay. It's a really cool card. I can imagine why someone would really want to play that card and build a whole deck around it. Sorry, you can't. And it's really annoying when you're looking through the card. And it's the last thing you see. So you read the card, you go, oh, that's really fucking... can't play it.
Yeah.
Great. Like, that's stupid.
This is the thing. There's two big things with this set, which... one of them is the new change, and the other one is how I think I feel about unsets in general. The new change of getting rid of the silver border and instead replacing it with this hollow stamp, in practice, solves the issue. And like, this is the thing, like they can't do wrong for doing right, I suppose. Because the big thing about Unstable, you're right, is that people were like, well, hang on a minute, if we just say that, you know, all but these two silver bordered commanders in this set are playable in EDH, because there was only like one or two that people thought were really broken. Most
Grand Calculon is just stupid. Yeah, so that was definitely a node. Yeah.
So they were like, well, let's make a difference and let's see if we can make a change. And obviously, WotC, keeping their ears to the ground because they want to keep Commander players happy, were like, cool, well, this is what we'll do. This is the solution. We'll get rid of the silver border. And instead of saying none of it's legal, we'll say it's all legal instead of these ones which have the stamp. And they go the other way. But here's the problem with that. The part of the charm, and this is one of the things I like about the unsets, is that they're able to get away with being silly and ridiculous because they are so clearly a different type of thing. And the silver border really helped sell that idea of going, look, these cards are for just like, you know, fun and japes. They're not really meant to be made onto, like, make it onto a battlefield, even in EDH. Like, it's a little bit of a push.
It's almost like now, from another universe, right? Like, oh yeah, it's the same game, but in that universe they use a silver border, you know.
And I used to play a Pippa Duchess of Dice deck because that was the one that I thought was the most interesting, and but also because it was one of the legends from Unstable that I thought was actually probably the most down to earth. It just did something unsetty because it was rolling dice, and the whole nature of the dice literally being the creatures, right? Like, the dice became, that you rolled became the token, if you like, that was the dice character that, you know, you created. But when they started making dice rolling actually a part of the game, more so in the,
and they were D12s, AFR, D20s.
I actually, like a bit of a magic hipster, I was like, well, I can't in all good conscience play this half silver boarded deck, because Pippa herself isn't much of a problem, but there are cards in there that like force you to re-roll dice a billion times, or like, you know, like lucky there's the enchantment that if you get to 100 on a dice roll, on multiple dice rolls, you win the game, right?
It's like chance encounters from, I know what you mean.
It was a bit like Simic Ascendancy, but for dice roll. So easy once you hit the Dungeons & Dragons thing. So I took that deck apart. And so having this now in Black Border just makes, as you say, all of those broken interactions just seem far more legitimate. And it brings me on to my second point. And this is why I've always been a little bit cold with the unsets in general. And it's exemplified in this. And some people are going to love it. I personally don't. It's a little bit like mum and dad have written a joke book for you to go and show to all your cool friends. Like, they're like, hey, you know, oh, we're gonna write these cool jokes. Hey, Timmy, do you want to make some friends? Well, dad's got the best way to make friends in Magic, and here are these cool jokey cards that you can like laugh about with your mates. And they're all just, it's all just a little bit cringe for me, because if you look at EDH, especially, we're EDH players, is why I'm looking at it as being like the Mario Kart of formats. Stupid shit that you can do, like ridiculous interactions, crazy things. Stupid shit like being able to put a pair of Swiftfoot boots on a squirrel, and like the idea of like, well, this squirrel's holding a sword and he's got a pair of boots, and like that's only possible in EDH because that's the only time these cards are playable together, blah, blah, blah. It's like they've done that, but they've formalized it and kind of sanitized it and been like, oh, hey, we think we're really funny, and these are the cards we think are really funny. And it's just, it's all just a bit forced. I find unsets really forced, and some of the older sets as well had jokes in them that I just think are just not even funny, and in fact a little bit crass. And I'm just like, can we get past it now? Like, Magic is already a bit silly and a bit funny anyway.
Sure, I do. Yeah, I do. I do see. Yeah, like, I agree. The only thing I say that might save this set, because I do think there is flavour to be found in unsets, and the reason I've always given them a lot more time is because as a kid, when you're not actually playing the game, because I wasn't when I first started playing, because it was just me and a bunch of cards, you spend a lot of time staring at them, looking at the nuance of them. And one of the things I really used to appreciate about unsets that isn't a thing now is how drastically they alter the border. You know, they would have it like broken, they'd have like food and stuff on it, like loads of really, really cool things that made the whole thing much more flavorful. And I know I felt like with Unstable, the humor didn't hit for me. It felt more like they were trying to do a functional set, which wasn't the point of an unset anyway. It should be absurd. And I really like absurdism. And this is the thing, I built a Nakuza Chaos deck years ago because I thought I like taking the rules and making the rules absurd. You know, that's one of the things I quite like. So I feel like because you've got the team doing all the a lot of the jokes and humor in this, I believe, are the Loading Ready Run crew. So I quite enjoy their vein of humor. So as much as there's a lot of the technical things that will happen with this set, I kind of disagree with, and we'll get onto the mechanic in a second that I think is the most stupid thing in the world. I think that we could probably still, especially as a podcast ourselves, probably still really enjoy what the cards are. It's just that it's always going to have that kind of like, oh, but half of them aren't playable and the other half are going to be chagrined by people anyway. Like, I wonder how much side are you going to get from people for playing like the, it depends on where they land on the power level and the ridiculousness of it. But again, I want my unsets to be absolutely absurd. And if half of it's legal, you can't do that. You're going to have some normal cards. And that happened in Unstable. There were some normal cards. Like, why can't this be a blackboard? And you don't want to be asking that in an unset. You want to be going, oh yeah, this is stupid. Why did they print this? Because as a draftable set, cool, it's fine. But when you start mixing it in, it starts again, the absurdism, it's diluted. So it's not absurd, it's just weird. So I'm hoping that a lot of the cards are going to be enjoyable in and of themselves. It's just annoying that I won't enjoy necessarily playing them as much as enjoying reading them and what they mean as a card. I won't necessarily want to see them sleeved. Saying that, it drops on my birthday, so I'm going to buy a box to draft. But
before we move on to what is potentially the most stupid mechanic in all of Magic and not for the right reasons, I already know what you're going to say. We don't have an agenda for this episode, but I already know what you're about to go on to.
Yeah.
I am annoyed that Magar of the Magic Strings is quite clearly a puppeteer when we already have a character in Magic that I think should be getting a puppeteer card. We've mentioned several times, and that is Taheem the Puppeteer from the flavor text of that one blue spell that I mentioned a while ago. And I had to, this is how masturbatory I am with this fucking podcast, in my opinion. I typed in, because I was like, is it Tazim or is it Taheem? I think there is it already Tazim in Magic. Oh, I can't remember. So I typed in Taheem, the Puppet Master, onto Google. And the fourth Google search down is a quote from the Magic the Flavoring podcast, who the flying flip is Taheem the Puppet Master, and why don't we have an Esper Commander card of him flipping now?
That's amazing. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So we're the only ones who give a shit about Taheem the Puppet Master, but why have we got Magar and not Taheem? Wizards?
Yeah. And that makes it less likely you're going to get him. I also want to say before we move on to Vitriolic Anger, I've got to love Killer Cosplay flavor text. Ah, Hans Run, get the camera. He's adorable. Steffi, Bob's daughter, next words. That's the kind of thing that as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I can't help but know that I'm going to, if the LLR team are doing this, then I feel like it's going to be, at least the humor I'm going to feel is going to be back. At least it's going to be farcical if it's not necessarily absurd. And as long as it can hit one of those notes, it still makes my child brain happy. It's just weird when there's a reason why the kids at a wedding will sit on the same table, you know? You don't spread them around the room, you know? Anyway, let's talk about fucking stickers.
Oh, God.
What are they doing? In what world is this? Like, what in what world did anybody want this? Who wanted this?
There's not even an acorn stamp on them. They're legal.
Oh, that's the thing, right? This is the thing. They deliberately said, this is the thing that really gets me in my, but you know what grinds my gears, Andy? But they said they deliberately didn't make them good enough for Legacy. So the only format this affects is EDH. So why? When we already have to deal with ability, with already the most complicated format out of any of them in terms of the breadth of the different mechanics. And Mara's answer was, Mara turned around and went, yeah, but you're already playing complicated format. Kind of deal with it. It's like, but no, you're actively making it ridiculously. Like, look, I've got several reasons why I hate them. The first one just being that why do they only have to be legal in EDH? You could have just made them not eternal legal and I'd have enjoyed the shit out of them playing them in a draft format. I'd have played, that'd have been so much fun, but it's just this giant gut thing in my body. That's like, imagine making contraptions eternal legal. They're better. Yeah. I'd rather contraptions be in EDH than stickers. Oh.
Yeah.
Is that an okay amount of anger? I don't know how much anger you have, but that's the level I'm going in at.
Yeah, I have a lot of anger. I have a lot of anger for them. Can you explain to me how these work, these stickers?
Fucking right, yeah. So there'll be two, there's an in and an out, right? So the in is you get a certain number of, I believe they're called coupons. There are certain effects. A perfect example for this would be animate object. Instead of inanimate object, it's animate object, which is a bit forced maybe. And you get seven symbol, and I believe that's coupons. And you choose an inanimate object you own from outside the game, put power and toughness sticker on it. So the idea is that you get a certain number of coupons, each sticker on the card has a certain cost of coupons. I believe that the pictures and the names are free, maybe, or I guess the pictures and the names will be effects, maybe like triggered effects, like so when this enters the battlefield, move a name sticker from your sticker card onto a creature or something. And the idea is that you have 10, there's 10 of them total, I believe. You're at the beginning, you shuffle them up and you pick I think three or something, so it's random which ones you get, and then those are your sticker allotments for the game. and then you'll have cards that will give you coupons, and then use your coupons to spend on stickers. And I imagine there'll be some cards that give coupons and spend coupons. There'll be some that only give, and there'll be some that only spend, blah, 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 blah. Again, as a limited format mechanic, I think it's cute because it's essentially a combination of mutate and keyword counters. So it's kind of all of the things of a courier in one thing. But
well, that was such a well-received set, wasn't it?
But for the right, like this thing is, that's on, and the thing is, because of EGH, we already have all of that, and you're adding that on top of that as well. And the thing that really gets
no,
me is that
no
this
one's
is like,
gonna do it. No one's gonna do it.
No,
though.
And
people
it's temporary
do it for the first
as
week
well.
And then stop. Yeah,
like how depending on the quality of the product, which considering how foiling's been recently, is going to be hit and miss. And I've heard that it's going to be like a post-it note stick, but after a while they're going to lose their stick. So there's only a finite amount of use you can even have of these. What if happened if one of them gets unstuck or gets fluffy or something? Like it's there are so many little things that maybe go, this is just clearly you've just taken a piss now. All right, you're just going they'll literally take anything. Guess what? Right next to it, the most beautiful hallowed fountain you've ever seen in your life. This is how they get away with it, Andy man. This is how they fucking get away with it. They put the most beautiful dual lands like ever that I've seen. Some of these are some of the most beautiful that I've ever seen, and then right next to it is this sticker monstrosity of a mechanic, and it's eternal legal. Oh, it's baffling. And again, in limited, I will love this mechanic, I will love this whole set, but the fact that it can spread, because it was silly when they did it when unstable. I built an X deck. A lot of those cards shouldn't have been legal for those 3 months. You should just be able to rule zero in environments that don't mind playing them. Like, no one ever had a problem playing your Pippa deck because you weren't being a dick about it, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of ways to play on cards that you can do that with. But the fact that you're now imagining the water to the table, well, these half are legal, these half aren't, that makes it even harder to argue that you should be playing, that you could rule zero the ones that aren't, because they've already given you half of the other ones. And then they do the stupid thing of giving the most, you could put a bobble hat on Sheldred. Fucking great. Good for you. Oh, honestly. Richard Garfield is rolling. He is rolling right now.
Is he? Richard Garfield's not dead.
No, he's just on whatever. In whatever room he is in, he is on the floor.
Oh, he's just rolling around the floor.
Because he's just mad. He's gone mad. Exactly. I cannot believe that he would greenlight something like this.
My bugbear with the stickers that we've seen. See, we've got a squirrel, a bubble hat, and then a little angel, dead angel, Gideon. That the little man's a Gideon doll with angel wings and a halo and little.
What do you reckon
eyes.
What do you reckon he says when you pull on the string?
Oh, leave me the fuck alone! I don't know.
Like, I'm dead. Let me die.
Yeah, let me be dead. Like, there's so many characters in Magic that have died. Leave Gideon alone.
Also, in Theros, you don't turn into an angel. Why have they given him angel wings? That doesn't even fit with the flavor of how he died or what they would think.
Oh well. Oh well. God. My favorite of the Shocklands is the Overgrown Tomb by was it Cliff Childs? Yeah, Cliff Childs. It's like the derelict spaceship with all the fungus growing on it.
I think that's really cool. I really like the steam vents, even though it's a bit on the nose. I also really, really like the breeding pool. That's really cute with the little tentacly dude.
Those are the two ones that I thought were the most boring.
Really? The funny thing is the breeding pool reminds me of the first planet you go to on Ratchet & Clank 2, is Uzma, I think it's called. It reminds me of that a lot. I really don't like stomping ground. I do like the idea of its meteorites hitting the ground, so from a flavour point of view, I like it, but I don't like the actual art itself, personally. But that's just me. I also really, really... I mean, again, we're just looking at the lands now. The lands are still, again, one of the best things.
The Bryce, Bernice Godless Shrine is really, really sick as well.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, we are literally... You're right. We're literally just looking at the cards now.
Well, the problem is, that's what they do. They're distracting you with the lands because the rest of it's bullshit. But here we go. Whatever. Okay, cool. We got through. United's coming out. It's fine.
Yeah. I'll be ignoring Unfinity as much as I possibly can. I was gonna say if someone brings out a sticker deck, I am gonna rub fur on the back of their stickers. But you know, that's literally damaging their product. And they can play if they want. This game's not all about me. I shouldn't be vindictive and petty. All I'm saying is if you do play a sticker deck, I will be very tempted to lick the back of them. That's all I'm saying. I won't do it. I'll just be tempted because you shouldn't be playing with stickers. You shouldn't be playing with stickers. This is a game of Magic. What are you doing? Like, grow up.
Exactly. I mean, I don't. Yeah, exactly. We'll see how it shakes down. I still think it will be a set worthy of picking out some highlights, because I reckon they'll have some gold in there. And I do like these sets in a nutshell. But the whole problem is I like them in a nutshell. Don't crack the shell open. It kind of makes things. I don't know. Anyway, good to be back. Getting angry about Magic. missed it
for sure. Yeah, it's interesting. My relationship to Magic has kind of evolved again since you've been away, and not necessarily because you've been away. Like, that makes it, Nathan's gone, how will I ever play Magic ever again? Nah, of course I would get on just fine without you. But like, in the time that you've been away, you've just been said there, oh, like, you know, there'll be some things to pick out for decks and, you know, some spicy goodness. I must admit, I've now transitioned into the mode of Magic playing where I tend not to go out and buy things from the new set unless it literally speaks to me, like jumps out of the card gallery. So whereas before, maybe even like a year ago, I'd be looking through every set going, right, cool, these are my 10 decks, I need something for Karlov, I need something for, you know, Tovalar, I need something for Queen Marchesa when she was still built, you know what I mean? Whereas nowadays, my decks are fine, none of them need any extra work, pardon me. None of them need, like, topping up. They all do exactly what they want to do. But if a new card in a set kind of goes, oh, that's an interesting piece of kit for Karlov, which it doesn't already do. Like, I don't need another Soul Warden or Soul's Attendant, do you know what I mean? But if something comes along that does something really interesting with life totals, I might bung that in. But it has to really jump out at me nowadays. So, sure. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't bought that much product from the last few sets.
As someone who, that's the thing, yeah, I haven't, it's not the new sets that, I don't know, Command Fest kind of broke me a little bit. My building has kind of overflowed to the point of where I'm completely burnt out in terms of changing decks, but I've also got enough and did enough changes recently to feel that I should be inundated. And what I've learned now is that what I want to start doing is updating the cards that I already have. You know, I'll start getting the ones that I've always wanted, instead of like feeling that each deck needs to be tuned up. It's like, it already plays well. Why not get that? Instead of buying all of these little like updates from the latest set, why not get that one card that you've always wanted? You know? Yeah. And I felt that's a, like, I got a treachery recently. And I got to cast it, and it was great. It was awesome. Obviously, stealing something else, having five lands might be the best feeling in Magic for me. And it's one of those cards that, you know, I've always wanted, and I felt that's much better than just making a load of tiny little tweaks to decks that I might see only once a year, you know? Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And as you say, that, like, I don't think cards are getting so good. Or I feel like cards can't be so good that absolutely must plays, and every now and again when you do find one that's like that, that's fine. But realistically, I feel like there's enough now, right? there's enough. We could stop now which is worrying, because now I'm at that point where I don't really want new decks, but there's only so many cards the decks can have in, so there's only so many cards that aren't movable. And then when the new sets come out, what do you do when you want to build a new deck? I don't know. I'm having like a Magic midlife crisis, I think. And the stickers is not helping. I feel you. Again, it's invest as much or as little as you need to win. When the cards are flowing, because the money is flowing for Hasbro, that's for sure. But when the cards are flowing so readily, only dip when you need a drink. But it's always nice to look at the river.
God, you fucking love an analogy, don't you? Jesus.
Yeah. God. Yeah, I know, I'm sorry. But that's kind of how I feel. There's so much coming out. Don't feel you need to buy everything. I feel that's the rule from the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You'll fill yourself up on chaff, for sure.
Save yourself for the bits that you really like and want to engage with, because there will be more of that rolling around soon enough if you don't like the current thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to when Brothers War drops. I'll definitely be trying to attempt like a mech deck. Or like a sort of like a diesel punk kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm interested to see them modernize the old war machines, because they got annoyed with Who am I talking about? They got annoyed. But you know, with like the eponymous they, like with Warhammer and getting like, you know, and having a few like futuristic things. Obviously, Unfinity's got some spacey kind of themes. It's going to be interesting to see people piss and moan about how can you have these robot things from the future? It's like, this is a past. The set from the past, you doofus. This is Magic. Oh, I want to quote that. I want to meme that meme of Eddie Munson. This is Magic. Oh, that's fantastic. Instead of music. But I know you hate Stranger Things. Never mind. Right, should we end the episode?
All right, let us know on Twitter at MTFlavoring how you feel about Dominaria United or indeed Unfinity. Have we both been a little bit grumpus about the super cool, fun, really exciting, super jolly, happy, whimsical set that is Unfinity and all the hard, wonderful work that the art direction team and the play design team have put in? And we've just turned around and gone, fuck yous. How do you feel about it? Let us know on our Twitter page. My personal Twitter is at AndyManFace. Nathan's, yours is...
At the Fox and the Moon.
Yeah, oh, I've been saying it for you for the past few episodes. Emails go to at mtflavoring. Oh, no, they don't. Emails go to mtflavoring@gmail.com. That's the one. I watched the film Krull for the first time last night. Just talking about it, you just popped into my head like futuristic things in like a like future and sci-fi and fantasy. You ever watched the film Krull? The 1983 Krull. Film Krull?
K-R-U-L? No. Though, yeah. Oh my god!
I bet you'd recognize it.
I'm getting flashbacks. Yeah, no, I haven't seen it though, yeah. But I do recognize that alien, the Cyclopsy dude. Yeah. Oh god, is it good?
Two quid on YouTube. Just go watch it and tell me what you think because it's a hell of a thing. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess you'll find out next time how that goes.
It's a film that you both absolutely believe and also can't honestly believe came out after the first Star Wars film. So that's all.
Okay. What's this Kraken dude? Okay. Cool. This looks interesting. I like it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, all that remains for me to say is thank you so much for listening. This has been Magic the Flavoring.
We'll see you soon.